Thanks so much, Pastor Mark, and it's a joy to be with you, and thanks so much for worship team. You know, you are blessed as a church. Every time I come here, there's new people, new faces leading us in worship and praising, and it's great to see the intergenerational teams. Fantastic. I love it. So for you younger folks like Mark, no, and other ones that are just rising up, you know, keep at it. You're doing fantastic. And it's just so wonderful to sing the praises of God, and God dwells in the praises of his people. And on that Palm Sunday, they were singing, Hosanna, Hosanna. Wow, fantastic. I just love Palm Sundays. I love so many Sundays. But you know, you see these branches, it just reminded me of our time in Africa, the 12 years in Côte d'Ivoire and Burkina Faso, and what they would do. I mean, whoever cut these off had to really think before they did it, because these are valuable. Over there, they have palm trees everywhere. They're with machetes hacking out the big, huge branches. And you know what church does at that time? They go to the textile mills, and they get tens of thousands of yards of material printed, Jesus is Lord, or whatever that type of thing is, and you go to your tailor, or, yeah, that's how you make your clothes, none of this stuff off the rack, and according to measurement, and you would think they'd have to measure it exactly, you know, and all that kind of thing. No, they just look at you, got that, skilled people, and they have all kinds of amazing dresses and shirts and pants, and then Palm Sunday, you don't stick around in church. Guess what? We all go outside and march up and down Ritson Road and all the other ones, and there are thousands and thousands of people, and the cars, if there are any, can wait. And join in this celebration of praising Jesus for who he is, the great King, the one who is Lord of Lords and King of Kings. But you know what? Sometimes, when you're thinking about, like, what should I preach about? And how should I say it? I don't know, there's this human thing within you. I don't know, maybe, perhaps none of you are like that, but you just always think, you know, oh, what will the people think? I had a great friend, his name was Curtis, black guy, black preacher, wonderful guy. But he too always had those heebie-jeebies before you start, you know? What will the people think? And he said, you know what, one day my mom told me, she sat me down, and she said, now Curtis, listen up. I said, okay, I'm listening. Now, on Palm Sunday, when Jesus came in, what was he riding? A donkey. And when all the people were there throwing their clothes down and waving the branches, what were they doing? Well, they were praising Jesus. Were they putting the cloth down and waving the branches for the donkey? No. Well, who was it for? It was for Jesus. And his mother said to him, Curtis, remember, be a good donkey. Bring Jesus to the people. So I thought that could be a good title for my message. Okay, we're done. Let's go. Be a good donkey. Bring Jesus to the people. And shout and praise. And Jesus, as he is coming in that triumphal procession, and you see people just praising him because they had been touched by his life. Eyes that could not see now saw. Those whose limbs were crooked were straight and nimble. And the little lads who had no hope and no future and no food had bellies full. And they thanked and they praised Jesus for what he had done, for he had touched lives and given hope where there was no hope. And they praise and they thank him. But notice, and let's not look at the donkey today. Let's look at Jesus. Focus your eyes on that passage that we see. And we are seeing Jesus coming in on that colt. And you want to look at the people. No, keep your eyes on Jesus. And what happens? I'm sure he just had these eyes filled with love and compassion to these people who so many of them he knew, and perhaps some he had never met in person, but he is God and knows them. And then he starts coming down that hill, and there's the city of Jerusalem. And perhaps some of you have been there, if not, perhaps in your mind's eye, or if you watch Netflix. And there's that city seething with people, with history. with the troubles, the difficulties, the problems. Look at Jesus. And we read, and as he approached Jerusalem, he saw the city, and Jesus wept. He wasn't bringing out, you know, the party things. Jesus wept while he was riding on that donkey that day. And then he says, if you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it's hidden from your eyes. Do crowds move you sometimes? You've traveled the cities, Istanbul, 19 million souls, Frankfurt, Shanghai, Beijing, Dubai, Belgrade, Budapest, Toronto, Montreal. And as we move and rush through the crowds to get to doing whatever we're needing to do, sometimes I'm overwhelmed by the vast needs. Where are the people going? What are they doing? And as we watch the wireless means of communication to us, would it be our smartphone or the internet, a numbness can set in, an indifference, a laissez-faire. We can become desensitized. And sometimes there's not that much that's even shocking because for self-preservation, perhaps we insulate and isolate ourselves even though the information is there. And even within our own community, there the needs are so great. Loneliness. You know that in the British Parliament now, they have a minister of loneliness. A minister of loneliness, even though we're so connected. But it's all a facade. Where can we go and actually unzip our chest and say, no, I'm not perfect, and I don't have millions of friends. Loneliness and despair. Sometimes even hatred and jealousy. And they're varnished over by quick fixes, artificial stimulants, which reduce and numb the pain for a while, but a pain that just won't seem to depart. And Jesus looked at Jerusalem. He looked at the people, and he looks at the world today with those eyes. And to those needs and people, perhaps because it's so overwhelming for us, for myself as an individual, I can easily develop an attitude, well, that's their lot. That's their business. And sometimes I can judge a little too quickly. And I can become a little too tired of helping. Ever been a little tired of helping? Throwing an extra buck in the offering plate? Serving a little more soup? All those kind of things. Remember one day I was heading out to teach my 4 hours lecture in the morning. It was in Yamoussoukro in the Bible school. There it was. Just, oh, I hope I can get through these. Isaiah, Ezekiel, Matthew, and Christian education. I think it was that morning. And 10 minutes before I'm supposed to whisk out of that door, some guy comes knocking on my door. Hello, Pastor Gerard. Yeah, who are you? Happens over there, you know. Come on in, sit down. And he says, you don't remember me. Guy's dressed nicely, you know. He says, you don't remember me from Dimbokho? You know, like the prison? I says, remember, there was a ministry in the prison, brought Jesus to the people, and a church of 150 people started there. But, you know, sometimes you'd have some repeat guys and come knocking on your door and need some more of this, you know, after they get out. Oh, I was one of those guys in there. And I'm thinking myself, I've got now 7.5 minutes to go, and like, okay, tell me how much you want. And I said, quickly, okay, now what can I do for you? I'm busy. And he said, oh, no, nothing. He says, they let me out, and I came and said goodbye to you. And then I went back to Senfra, and my life has been touched. And I got on the bus today, and I wanted to come and meet you and say thank you for bringing me to Jesus. And I'm thinking, well, and then what's next? That's it. Somebody actually coming back and saying, thank you. Wow. And I thought back to myself, wow, I could have missed that opportunity of compassion, of love. And not only that, in my busyness of life, I could have missed this wonderful opportunity. So I blessed him and I thanked him, gave him a hug. And there he's probably in that surrounding area of Senfra, probably waving one of those branches even today, praising Jesus. Needs, problems. What was Jesus' reaction? Elsewhere I read, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. And when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And then he said to his disciples, well, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are so few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Sheep without a shepherd. What do they look like? Nobody gives a rip, about them. Ravaged, hurt, scattered. But there is something in the heart of Christ as he comes riding on that donkey. He's full of love. He's full of compassion. You see it in his heart, and it actually flows out into his emotions. Jesus felt compassion for them. You say, what in the world is that word compassion means? Well, here's a definition. It's a form of love determined by the state or condition of its objects. Their state is one of suffering and need, and they may be unworthy or ill-deserving. Compassion is at once the disposition of love representing such and the kindly ministry of love for their relief. Psalm 37, verse 21, the righteous showeth compassion, mercy, and giveth. Verse 26, he is ever full of compassion, merciful, and lendeth. Proverbs 14, verse 31, he that honoreth his maker hath compassion on the poor. Micah 6, 8, what does the Lord require of thee but to love mercy and compassion? Hosea 6, 6, I desired mercy, compassion, and not sacrifice. Jonathan Edwards, an old preacher, said this about compassion. Listen, follow, stay with me. Compassion is the ability in me to see with the other fellow's eye and feel with his heart. Compassion puts me in my neighbor's place to do something about his situation. Compassion thus becomes the stimulus and incentive, the impulse within me that tramples down my self-studiousness, self-containment, self-ambition, my self-religion. Compassion arouses my emotions, my impulse to duty, even my imagination, until I associate with my brother and make his mind and soul and circumstances my standing point, and this quality of compassion characterizes the righteous person. And Jesus was filled with compassion. He is filled with compassion even today. Matthew 14, verse 14, we see all kinds of sick people. And when he landed, he came out. He saw a great multitude, we read, and felt compassion for them and healed the sick. Matthew 15, verse 32, there were hungry people. And Jesus summoned to himself his disciples and said, I feel compassion for the multitude because they have remained with me for 3 days, and they have nothing to eat. Matthew chapter 20, verse 34, and moved with compassion, two blind men sitting on the side right, and they cry out, Lord, have mercy. And people tell him, quiet down, you're bothering him. But Jesus moves with compassion. And what does he do? He touches their eyes. He touches their eyes, and immediately they receive their sight and follow him. And then Matthew 23, verse 37, he sees a spiritually sick Jerusalem in another context of the same riding on the donkey. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her? How often I wanted to gather your children together, the way a hen gathers her chicks under his wings, her wings, and you are not willing. And you can feel the burden of Christ for people. Luke chapter 7, verse 12 to 24. A dead son, a widow, surrounded by a huge crowd. And Jesus sees them and says, stop. He touches the coffin. He felt compassion. He says, do not weep. And the son lives. John chapter 11, verse 35. Lazarus, a good friend. Don't bother. He's stinking in the grave. Jesus says, roll that stone away. Lazarus, in a loud voice, come forth. And the man walks. He lives. Compassion. Luke 4, verses 18 and 19. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me to preach the good news to the poor, to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, to recover of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed. And behind the preaching of the gospel, behind the healing of the sick, the setting folk free from demon possession, raising the dead, feeding the hungry, performing miracles, forgiving sin. What's behind all that? Compassion, mercy, the love of Christ. And isn't it so great to know that our God, He is King, and He's holy and He's just, but He's full of love and compassion, and He is never desensitized to need, and He felt compassion, and He was moved by compassion today, and He wept with compassion. May I suggest to myself and all of us this morning, that's not exactly a head issue, it's a heart issue. He was burdened. Perhaps I've told you this story, I can't remember, there's so many. It was a Monday. I was tired, had other things to do. Our houseboy, Quadio, said, hey, somebody's sick in the village. I said, yep, that sounds normal. My village. He was the only Christian. He finally convinced me, let's go in the car and drive 13 miles down the road into this little village called Coco-Clo. It was February. It was hot. As you know, in Africa, three seasons, hot, hotter, and hottest. It was the hottest. The air conditioning was not working in the car. And there we are, on my day off, driving down the road, and I'm thinking, you know. But you can't say that. Sorry. Confession is good for the soul, and I know you're all great people. And as you turn off the road, dust is swirling behind you, this great cloud of orangey, brownish cloud of dust, and gets into your car and it's into your teeth and all that. And finally, there you find the little village way there with mango trees that still have leaves on there. Most of the other grass is all dried up. And there underneath some mango tree and beside some mud huts, you see this crowd of people. And they're looking at a person who's lying on the, well, floor. It's not floor, I guess, the dirt. And he's on a little mat. They run up to you and they say, oh, there's all kinds of problems with him, you know, all that kind of thing. But he's looking all like bug eye, his neck's right back. And I'm thinking, oh, boy. And you walk closer. Oh, il a mangé son totem. He ate the food that was forbidden to him by the evil spirits. Oh, okay, fine. Anything else? Oh, minor detail, and somebody just whispered, yeah, he was circumcised, was that 5 days ago or 6 days ago? Whatever it was. With a straight blade. It hadn't been cleaned or anything. You know, it's cheap, you know. It's like a local nurse, you know. And the tetanus shot? That's $1.50. You know, that's a lot of money. That's like $150 for us. Well, you know, I mean, and not only that, if you get sick over there, it's got nothing to do with little germs or microbes or something like that. It's just the spirit world. Rien pour contre la volonté de Dieu. Nothing can happen against the will of God. That's what we'd say in the African language. And you just say, oh my goodness. $1.50. And a young man, 21 years of age, lies there with his back as straight as can be, his head tilted back, his eyes just glazing out of his head into space. And they say, can you do something? Well, I know enough to know that that's not positive. My heart wasn't full of compassion. It's just like, you stupid people. And then all of a sudden, the Lord put a check in my heart and said, well, you've been blessed with a medical plan. You can afford the $150. And all kinds of, and then, oh, God, forgive me. Put him in the back seat. Couldn't bend his body. Just could barely close the back doors. Took him to the hospital, Dimboko. A little hospital that looks like a little motel that's gone out of business on your road up to Bancroft or who knows what, you know, like formerly, vestiges of former glory, you know, these little windows kind of out there, flies all over the place. If you want to eat, three stones outside, you move your sticks in and out to raise or lower the temperature. Family member have to come. Little prescription is written, you got to go to the pharmacy and fill that and put it in a plastic bag, put it at the edge of his bed. And wait for the physician to come. French physician happened to be in town, for there's only one other, and you see a lineup of 150 people standing in that blistering heat waiting for their 10 seconds where they can get an anti-malaria, an antibiotic, and some other thing. It's just a shotgun approach because all the diagnostic equipment is not there. French doctor says, oh my, tetanus. He says, will he live? He says, doubtful, but we'll try what we can. Some Christians from the church, we would just pray for this young man, Francois. Pay the money for the les médicaments, the medicine. There it is. Doctor does what he can. God bless these doctors. His life's in the balance. One day, it's not looking good. Next day, progress. Happy. And it was like this. But slowly, it got better. He became conscious again. And told him about God, Christ, and why he actually came. And you wonder sometimes if you're just flapping your gums to really tell if there's ever going to be anything that happens. It was about 6 weeks later. It was early in the morning. Well, early. About 10 o'clock in the morning. A young man standing at the gate. Go, 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 go. That's what they say. Go, go. Go there, creak the door. Oh, don't you reckon? I mean, wrong person in the wrong place, right? The guy is standing on his hind legs. There he is. Francois, come on in, you know. Come on, sit down, you know. Like, good to see you, bro, you know. Yeah, tell me. He says, look, I'm well. I says, yeah, fantastic. I can bend my body, you know. Burpees. But not only that, he says, Christ touched my life, and I bent my heart. And I'm going to go back to the village. I'm on my way, taking the taxi. And I want to tell the people over there. He gets back to the village. He lives. Can't believe it. A village totally resistant to the gospel. It was after Easter. Village chief gets in touch with us. Later on tells us, hey, by the way, would you come over and do the Jesus film thing? You know, that's when you had the generator. Vroom, on deck. Nice one. Behind, like way behind a village, a hut, big long extension cords, put the screen, which is basically a king-size white bed sheet, a sound system, and you start showing the Jesus film. Four wheels. The flying termites come out. The women are there with their little buckets of water, and they catch them and throw them right into the water because, I mean, just in case you get stuck over there. And they say protein is going to be one of the biggest things. Insects. You do that, they can't fly anymore. They scoop it up, put it on the grill, and you have little crunchies in your intermission. Yummy. You can hardly contain your excitement, right? There it is. And the people, for the first time, they see this man who heals. And Francois is sitting in the front. He heals. Like, whoa. He is saying that this Jesus did the same thing. And you see people weep because they take him and stretch him out on a cross after he did all this good. And his blood drips to the ground. And he did it for you and me, and there's no hope. But after the third day, miracle of miracles, he rises from the dead. To prove that which he did to justify His righteousness for us before the cross of Christ, and God Almighty, that He accepted this offering, that is acceptable, and that because He lives, we too shall live. Wow! And if you, by the way, any folks here would like to come and ask Jesus, who is stronger than Satan and all his other powers, and free you up, you come on down. And that Christmas with 126 people in a mud hut, the little roof that we put over the thing, 126 people with Francois in the front, my wife and three sons over there, and Quadio are praising Jesus. And you pinch yourself and you say, I could have said, it's not my day. I'm not on call and I don't get paid overtime. Got the point? And I'm with a hair's breadth away from doing that. And you would never have known. But God knows. And the one riding on the donkey, he says, I know. Thank you, Ritson Road, for all that you've done for all these years. You actually care for people. You have a good reputation, a great reputation amongst churches. You care for people here and there. You go downtown. You actually invite missionaries to tell these stories. And you support and you care. And I say, thank you so much. But sometimes we get tapped out, don't we? I do. And I say, could I keep going? Sometimes we get the brain going too much, too. Young man, he was a bright guy, lawyer, religious student. Jesus, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Jesus says, well, what does the law say? Oh, I know that answer. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and might, and your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, gold star, top of the class, go out and do it. Oh. And then he says to Jesus, because that really wasn't what he wanted to talk about. Well, then, who is my neighbor? Well, you know, there was this dude, he was marching up from Jericho and he was going to Jerusalem. Some thieves came and beat on him and left him at the side of the road. They took his smartphone, they took everything, even his Adidas. They took it all. Now, this religious guy, one of the priests, he came watching. He said, oh, shoot, that's bad. But you know, I'm late for a prayer meeting. We'll have to pray about that when we get to church. The other guy, well, he was more into the law stuff, and he says, we got to enact some more laws in this society. This is just disgusting, and kept going. And then there's another person that happened to come by, Jesus said. Now, nobody really liked that people group, that ethnic group. They were kind of a mixed race. But you know what? He actually got off his donkey and went and cared for him and took care of his needs. Threw him on his donkey. He was the one that pulled the donkey and hobbled all the way there, saw the local inn and said, hey, care for this guy. And not only that, I really am busy, but when I get back, I'll take care of the bill. Anything else, put it on my Visa. And Jesus said, who then? Who then was the neighbor? And that young man said, you got me. The one who cared. And God's people, children, can be involved in all kinds of religious activity. I can, but sometimes you lose a little compassion. You say, really? And there I was up in the mountains, overlooking the plains of Nineveh. The city of Mosul, old Nineveh. And all the story floods back into my mind. Finally, Jonah, after he was burped out by the fish, Jonah had obeyed God by actually now reverting his trip from Spain, now off to Mosul, northern Iraq, right near the Turkish border. And he went and he actually did what God wanted him to do, preach his message. But his heart attitude had not been changed to an attitude of compassion. he so hated the Ninevites. You know, like ISIS, the stuff they do. And back then, the cruelty of the Ninevites were known throughout the world. They would take their prisoners and skin them alive. Read the documents. And his heart looked forward to their destruction. Burn them. God had taught him the lesson of obedience, but cold-hearted obedience is not what God desires. And God wanted Jonah to have an attitude of compassion towards the Ninevites. So he preaches. But he didn't see what he wanted God to do. God had mercy. And guess what? The king tears his robes, sits in sackcloth and ashes. The whole city repents. Can you imagine? You think this guy would be like, Hosanna, you know, like God is great. He goes to the edge of the city. And he just waits for God to have his second thought and send fire down on them. Because, you know, justice. Have you ever felt that way? Come on, be honest. And there is this tension. A holy and a just God and a compassionate God. And somehow it all intertwines. And I'm just so often black and white. Sorry. Some folks have done you wrong or engaged in hurtful activities. People caught in the grip of sin. And sometimes you can say, well, they reap what they sow, which is true. But the reason the rest of the world is so poor and has difficulty is, well, you didn't follow through with some of God's commands. Perhaps you should work harder. Remember being in Africa. Sometimes I would actually think that sometimes. And yeah, I guess we need to all work a little bit harder from time to time. Until I was in that hottest season. Until you get those parasites. Have you ever had parasites? You can shake my hands. I've taken all the medicine. But when you have Giardia and all that, you take, and most missionaries know that. You get Vermox and Mintazole and all that before you come home so you can shake the hands of people. You know. Right. Anyways, it's a draining experience, so to speak. Come on, work with me, guys. And then culture, which stifles initiative. The Aussies say, cut the tall poppy down. If you kind of try and get ahead, chop them down. You don't want to see somebody get ahead. Put that all in the thing, and you don't have a huge inheritance. And every time you try and better yourself, somebody tries to pull you back down. And you say, after a while, it's kind of tough to get going. Live there, walking a mile in their shoes. Sundar Krishnan once said, and I don't know if he got it from somewhere else, he said, we need to have passion for a holy God, but compassion for unholy man. Got that? Passion for a holy God and compassion for unholy man. And Jonah, unfortunately, had little compassion, despite the fact that he knew what God was like. Imagine that, a missionary without compassion, a prophet of God without compassion, a Christian in Ritson Road without compassion. But God was gracious and compassionate, meaning that he had the welfare of man on his heart and passionately desired to lift man from his sin. Who's deserving of God's mercy, compassion? Jonah? The Israelites? The Ninevites? The Christians? Non-Christians? Great sinners? You and I? People down the street? None of us. None of us are deserving. But yet the Lord is compassionate, slow to anger, abounding in love. And as I would walk out of that prison in Dimboko with that 13-year-old boy who'd stolen two pigeons and $5 and another guy who was in there for like all kinds of stuff. And I thought to myself, the difference between him and I is they were caught and I wasn't. God's love, God's mercy, God's compassion seen at the cross. But God demonstrated his love towards us in that while we were yet sinners. And that's the good news. While we were yet haters of God, Christ died for us. Hallelujah. And that's why you can take the palm branch today. And he wants us, me, Gerald, to have mercy, compassion, but a compassion that ushers into action. Like the Good Samaritan, he helped, had pity, took care. Jesus preached the gospel, healed, delivered, raised, gave his life. And as the Father has sent me, so said Jesus as on that donkey, so send I you. Today, thousands and millions of people are without Christ. And as you look at the cities, as you look at your neighbor, at your friends at school, workmates, all that God asks for us is to have a heart filled with love, his compassion for the whole world. And he says, go into the whole world. And to the demon-possessed man who was delivered, he says, go home and tell your friends what great things God has done for you. And elsewhere, Jesus said, go and do. Go and show. Go out quickly into the streets and the lanes. Go out into the highways, into the hedges. Go into the vineyard. Go into the village. Go into the city. Go into the next towns. Go to the lost sheep and preach the gospel of God. Go into all the world. And with his command ringing in their ears, Jesus' disciples set out not only to reach the world, but to turn the world upside down in their generation. You say it can't be done? There are 2.3 billion people in this world today that in some name the name of Christ, and that's not in a profane way. And with hearts full of compassion, they suffered hardships and persecutions and beatings and even death. But they said, we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. We are people under authority, and we are under command. And our commander-in-chief says, go, and we go. And Jesus moved among the crowd, and he was moved with compassion because he saw them as sheep without a shepherd. Israel, Jonathan and Ruth Tale, tens of thousands of Jewish people who were expelled and from various countries find their way back home to Israel. Who's going to build the buildings, the houses for these people to live in? Well, guess what? Let's get contractors to bring in people from mainland China. Thousands and thousands of them. Why not? They'll be happy. They'll get better wages than back home. And we'll be happy because these buildings can be built. And so it happened. Thousands of these people came. Jonathan and Ruth, you speak Mandarin, Cantonese. Would you go over there to Israel? You mean I've got to leave my church in Ottawa? Yep. But I came from Singapore. I know I was a fighter pilot with the Singaporean airport. I pulled too many G's and they fired me and I became a tank commander. And then I ended up finding Christ and I hit on the pastor's wife, the pastor, Ruth Tao, 10 years older, married her, come to Canada, study at CBC, CTS, come to Ottawa. And I said, how'd you like to go to Israel? He says, give me the gun, I'll pull the shell. Let's go. I thought, sounds great. Let's go. And there they go, and they move to that city just outside Chovot, right outside of Tel Aviv. Well, how do you do this? Oh, you see construction cranes? There'll be Chinese workers. So there they go. They go. And when you go in the evening, and I remember going with Jonathan and Ruth, there you go in the evening. You have these buildings that are, you just have the rebar and the walls and the concrete. You go down into the basement. And there you see a mattress no thicker than that. You see the three stones, and that's where they're cooking their rice and whatever. And they're trying to save every penny to perhaps ship it back because it goes a long way back there. And you sit there. And through translation, Jonathan's telling me, Oh, yeah, but their conditions are deplorable. What happened? Well, the contractors sit there and they take their passports. Okay. And you have a contract. Well, where'd the contract go? You don't have your passport. Oh, really? But I haven't been paid in months. Oh, it'll come. It'll come. And all of a sudden, all this hope, all this, like, I left my, and I'm here, and, like, it's all falling apart. And there you sit on a little cinder block turned up as you listen to their stories. And somebody actually comes. His name is Jonathan Ruth. They go from place to place and they listen to their story. That too is compassionate because nobody cares to even listen. And they listen to the story and not the story, the hearts of the person. Wow. And I don't know what I'm going to do. Can you help? And in practical, tangible ways, they care for these workers. They tell them about Christ. Some other day I'll tell you how they did this. It's very interesting, but they eventually would have celebration services. And they said, the crowds are getting too big. We need a big stadium. Can you imagine that? 3,500 people in the Tel Aviv sports stadium with 1,000 people outside who cannot get in. And there they bring short-term teams, worship teams, keep practicing, guys, come on. And you sit there and set up, and they're just rocking and rolling, praising Jesus, and you have your Chinese New Year's or your Mid-Autumn festivals, and they do a whole celebration and special food, and they cared, and they loved, and people said, oh, it reminds us so much of home, even though I can't go back. And people by the thousands, 7,200 workers, as far as we know, came to Christ, including students in the Weissman Institute. If Harvard is slow for you, you go to the Weissman Institute. That's where they're figuring out how to use your DNA as computer chips. Huh? So you have your second and third doctorate. Emptiness, but there is a God. 43 of these PhDs come to Christ. And now some of them have quit. They've gone back to mainland China, heads of churches, to California, different places. Love, care. Just because you have a mind full of information doesn't mean your heart's full of love and care. And the presence of Christ comes and changes lives and situations. I've seen it with my own eyes. And God invites us to do it here with a neighborhood barbecue, which we did. It's amazing the conversations we have on our street now. The fitness place. It's wonderful to be able to talk to all kinds of people. And all of us have a drop in the bucket. Your life, you say, yeah, but my days are done. No. Each one of us, no matter what our age, our lives count, have purpose and meaning. Mother Teresa said, well, if you're only a drop in the bucket, that's still important because the bucket will be minus one drop. If you don't put yours in, there's a lot of drops here. And what would Christ want to do us? He would want us to take these palm branches this morning and give praise. And you could probably give praise to God for all the people who've come to know him, to love him through your lives. Wonderful. But let's never give up. And for each one of us, it's different. How it's expressed. There's no cookie-cutter situation. And God, I pray, will take the imagination of your heart and your mind and you as a community here in Oshawa to have an impact in this world to the praise of his glory. Because one day there will be people from every tribe and tongue and nation and people around the throne with palm branches singing praise like you've never seen before. The ultimate gathering, the ultimate Palm Sunday. So with that, I close. So my suggestion this morning is be a good donkey. Bring Jesus, our compassionate King, to the people. God bless you.